This is Notes from a Native Daughter, Voices from the Pan-American Experience, raw and one-on-one.
So I look forward to the third phase in my life. I'm at the end of my second phase. My first phase was that childhood into adulthood. Second phase is adulthood until you're 50, I guess. You know, as I enter the third phase and I look back, it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience to be able to have done what I did, what I've been doing, what I've done, what I still do. You know, I started the radio show and now I'm on two channels. And one of the channels is actually a classic salsa channel. It's just classic salsa 24 hours a day. And we were able to achieve that as a result of the success of the show on the one channel, the first show that I had, and how people would just listen to the salsa show, you know, every Saturday from 9 to 12. And all of a sudden, it just grew popularity. And it prompted the program director, Brian Pino, to say, wait a minute, you know, we have to, like, maybe do a salsa channel, a classic salsa channel. And the rationale that we presented to them is, hey, the people that listen to that genre of music, those are your listeners. Those are your customers. They're second generation Puerto Ricans, maybe first generation.
Maybe even third.
They're retired. They have disposable income. They drive. They moved out. They live in Florida, whatever. And they agreed.
Or in Yonkers.
Or they just have cars.
Yeah.
And they agreed and they did some research and the channel's been on the air. And it's great to listen to all my music all day long, you know. And then I have my show and I have like different artists doing the voiceovers like Tony Vega. And it's funny because todas las frases de Cocolo, todas esas cosas de Cocolo, todo lo hablamos en rumbón. Tú sabes, so it's like, you know, Tony Vega, the promos will be like, bueno, saca los bellón para la bellonera, ponte la brillantina en el pelo, you know, all those things that, you know, we grew up with in Puerto Rico, right? And then I remember when I was a kid, you know, there was a movement, and I don't know if I'm saying this correct, había un movimiento que se llama el movimiento de conservador, que it was like a black movement, black Puerto Rican movement, where Black Puerto Ricans took it upon themselves to, like, undergo a complete turnaround and, like, be totally opposite of what people were stereotyping them for. That was in the 70s. I'll never forget. And it's when se convirtió la moda en cargar un pañuelo siempre. Tú sabes, los pantalones que se utilizaban, los bell bottoms que se utilizaban y eran sin correa. Que tenían dos botones aquí en el lado, tú ponías el pañuelo aquí y lo doblaba. Entonces, la idea era como un movimiento que se formó entre los cocolos en Puerto Rico, en esa época, donde era como que no somos monos, no somos salvajes, tú sabes, you know, we're gonna look decent all the time. Siempre bien vestido, tú sabes, un pañuelito, pues si acaso había sudor, tú sabes, el afro bien corta, you know, Jackson 5. I don't remember the name of the movement. I always thought it was called El Conservador, un conservador. But I don't know if that was it. But I remember when I was a kid, I saw it in Puerto Rico. And I remember my mother's cousin was talking to my mother and me about it. And he was like, no, tú siempre tienes que tener tu pañuelo. Y cuando tú vas a los bailes, tú pones el pañuelo entre la mano tuya y la mano de la dama. Y siempre, y nunca, que nunca te vean sudado, que nunca te vean con ese brillo, que nunca te vean, tú sabes, todo, siempre con una botellita de perfume para siempre estar. And it was like this whole resurgence of like pride. And I thought that was so cool. And it was like 70s. It was in the 70s, mid to late 70s. And it was a phenomenal experience. To have seen that. And I think about it to this day. I think about it all the time. And I always think about the fact that my grandmother always used to say, una persona de color tiene una obligación de cuidarse más que una persona blanca. Tú tienes que mantenerte más que una persona blanca. Pero tú eres una persona de color. And I didn't understand it. But now I understand it. So it's like, go against the grain. Go against the stereotype. Tú eres de color. be the opposite of what they think you're going to look like. Be the opposite. Take pride in yourself. You know, and I remember, like, going to get manicures for the first time. And, like, you know, going and trimming the hair in my ears and the hair. You know, like, because of all this. This is when I was young, you know. Thinking about that, like, how important it is to look good. And I mentioned it. I've had this conversation with some people. Some people would be like, sí, pero tú no eres negro. Pero no soy blanco.
I ain't white. That's exactly what I say. I'm not Reese Witherspoon.
I'm not white.
I'm not Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like...
Brad Pitt.
I'm not Brad Pitt, but I'm not freaking... I'm not, you know, Denzel Washington either. You know, I'm not that, but it's a black and white world. Let's be realistic.
So for me, the thing is, if you ain't Gwyneth Paltrow or Brad Pitt,
then you're black.
Then you're black.
You're black. So I'm black, you know? And then.
Because that's the way they see it.
That's the way it is. You know, Latinos have this tendency to be very, have so much pride in their. Where they come from? Well, what country are you from? Oh, I'm not. Oh, you know, when you say to somebody, "Tú eres Puerto Rican," you're like, "I'm not Puerto Rican. I'm Dominican." Well, you're Dominican. I don't know, damn Dominican. I'm Puerto Rican. Listen, I learned one thing. This is a white man's world, unfortunately, and the white man doesn't give a shit where you're from. All he sees us is Spanish people, Latino. The problem, the call. They don't care if you're for all.
And if you're brown, that's it.
They could care less. You know, again, as I get into the third phase, now it's like, you know, I still do the music and I've been fortunate enough to book talent and do shows and produce shows for Summer Stage during the summer season. It's been almost 10 years now. And I get a chance to bring some of these great talent to, you know, the different parks for free for the public, to the different parks in the New York City area. Ismael Miranda, Jay Rivera, Tito Nieves, Tito Rojas, Andy Montañez, Gran Combo, who else did I do? Willie Colon, Tony Vega, Hibeta. I've done all those artists in the different parks. And this year, this is my 10th year, I'll be producing those events again. And it's great to be able to do that. And along with everything else that I do, I still work for this marketing agency that I started working for about 6-7 years ago. And I started working in marketing in 2005, just basically as an opportunity that somebody told me about. And they were like, hey, this guy, they're looking for a Latino to work on their staff. And I went to work at Vital Marketing. And that's when I was exposed to the experiential marketing world. I didn't know what it was all about. I just went to work. All they knew was that I was a talented guy that could do anything. And they were like, go on. And as the years went by, I was there for 5 years, 2010. And then I worked independently for 2 years, for a year. And then I started working for Track Marketing. And it's been a wonderful experience to work experiential marketing. I've traveled the world working for brands like Twitter, Pepsi, TuneIn, Brownie Brittle, Herbalife, Hollister. We've done stuff for Macy's. We've done stuff for New Balance. It's a very big client. I worked the New York City Marathon the last 2 years in a row for New Balance. So it's been a very rewarding, financially rewarding too, because that's a major part of my bread and butter. That's my major income, which is the marketing. That's what sustains and gives me the opportunity to go out, do the radio show, you know, and produce events and stuff like that. And then I make my money doing events, producing those events, of course. But, you know, the daily, to keep the home going, everything has been the marketing world that I work in. And I've been very successful in that, thank God. And it's helped me, you know, provide a home for my family. And, you know, and my wife is a great provider as well. So we've built a beautiful home here, thank God, and I'm very proud of, you know, all of our achievements. And you know, I don't think I'll ever leave New York. You know, my wife asked me the other day if, like, you ever think about if we retire, do you want to go to Florida? And I'm like, I just kind of like just thought to myself for a minute. I said, you know what? I think I just want to die on the F train. I just want to die on the F train. I just want to, like, you know, I just want to die. You know, just like 80. 85, still working, not because I have to, but because, you know, I want to, and just, you know, get up one morning, go to work, and with my headphones on, and just boom, pass out. And that was it. Said, we're on the F train. You know, I don't know if I want to, like, you know, first of all, I don't want to go to Florida. I think the city that makes the most sense to me in the world is New York. I don't think, it just seems so real. It just seems like the real, it seems like the real world. It's like everything else. And it's not the, just like they say, oh, New York is a myth. Okay, maybe New York, what once was, or when it was a great place to make money doing this or doing that. Those things come and go. But New York, in a positive way and in a negative way, is the real world. It's the reality all through and through. Through and through. It's, it's like, whoa. I didn't realize that, that existed until I came to New York. I never met anybody from that country until I came to New York. I never knew that those things really happened until I came to New York. You know, it's all here. And it makes sense to me. The craziness makes sense to me. It makes sense to have rats in the subway. It makes sense to have obnoxious people that don't want to give up seats. It makes sense to have a million people walking down the sidewalk and you're in a rush trying to get through, And it makes sense, to have so much diversification. And it makes sense to be in a melting pot, because the only way we can respect each other as people is if we live together diversified. Cuando vivimos todos juntos en un lugar y todos somos del mismo sitio, nos faltamos el respeto uno al otro. Tú no vas a conseguir el mismo respeto en una comunidad diversificada en Nueva York como puertorriqueño. Voy a mudar allí y eso va a ser a struggle. That's going to be a struggle because we don't respect each other. And it's not just Puerto Rican. It could be Dominican, it could be Colombian. We, as a people, Latinos, we have this tendency to throw to each other, like we were talking about earlier. And because of that, it makes it hard to survive within our own, in the communities that we built. Yeah, of course, there's the exceptions. There's millions of exceptions. In Washington Heights alone, there's people that are born and raised in Washington Heights and they love it and they find it fascinating, But that's been my observation, So I said to myself, for the sake of respect, existence, and being able to live in harmony, I always have to live in a diversified neighborhood. That's the way it's gotta be to me.
I agree.
Well, thank you.
Totally.
What else can I talk about? I can go on talking for hours. You'll need a new phone by the time I finish talking.
No, I think you've said a lot of beautiful things, and I agree with a lot of what you said. When you look back and you see the younger people coming up, what scares you, and what would you say is something that this young pool of people coming up that are going to take our places should embrace?
Well, I got three rules that I established for myself once I turned 50. Rule number one, dress your age. There's nothing looks more foolish than that when you're like, what are you wearing? You can love something at the age of 50, but it's not for you. It's not for you. Don't force yourself to wear something that you're going to look ridiculous in, Number two, embrace technology. The older you get, the more aware and the more apt you have to become to modern day technology. Don't become a dinosaur. No, you don't have to be on Snapchat. You don't have to be on Instagram. You don't have to be on Tinder. You just know what it is. Know what it is. And the most important rule that I live by now that I'm older, never, ever underestimate the power of youth. Never underestimate it. It's out there. You have to know how to support it. You have to know how to get out of its way. You have to know how to learn to identify it. And you have to learn how to, just say, how can I help? Support it, basically. Identify it. Be like, well, what's happening now with these kids upset about the gun violence? That's going to move the needle. that's going to move the needle.
We have to support them.
We have to support them. We have to support them. And, you know, you also have to give them an opportunity to do what they're going to do. You know, listen, you can be a new guy on the block working in the music industry, so to speak, and my name might have come up here or there or whatever, and they come in to meet me. I am not going to insist that I know more than that individual. I might know more about life in general, about, you know, I might know more about that, or I might know about more about music in general, but it's trivial. It's trivial. That individual, that young individual is coming with a different energy, a different mindset, a different upbringing. I had to, you know, those kids, my daughter, they're born in a computerized world. We had to adapt to computers. They came later, you know? So we had to adapt to the digital world. They were born with digital world. So that's all they know. And, you know, you have to, like, just be able to say, one of my favorite actors ever is Cary Grant. And one of the things that Cary Grant was well known for in Hollywood was Cary Grant would never give anybody advice. He refused to give people advice. And people would be like, oh, Mr. Grant, what do you think I should do? He'd be like, I don't know. And people used to look at it. Some people would think about it and say that's some in a negative way. Like, wow.
Selfish.
No. He's just like, look, I don't know. You have to do it yourself. Get your life
is your life.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, figure it out. Figure it out. And I think that philosophy is the philosophy that I like to follow to this day. You know, you need my advice. You want to pick my brain about something that happened? By all means. How did that really happen back in 1985? Was it true that I'd be like, no. Well, what actually happened was this, this, and this, and this. You come to me and you say, I don't know what to do with my job. I don't know what to do. I don't know, kid. Figure it out. You know, because it's so easy to give the wrong advice. So stay away from giving advice. I'll advise my daughter, that's about it.
I think that's wise. That's actually a very noble. Yeah, I mean, the times change, and what's right for your life might not be right for somebody else's life. You don't know what their circumstances are, what their context is, where they're coming from, why they think this. And it's like, well, I'm going to tell you what I know because I did this, but it doesn't mean...
I could recommend something. Well, you know...
And people misconstrue and misinterpret. You might tell them, oh, no, because este me dijo que hiciera esto.
Yeah, exactly.
And then if they fail, it's all on you. It's exactly.
Exactly. You know, so... That's what I see, you know. I look forward to the golden years, you know. Everybody has a run. You know, I learned early on in life that everybody has to bring something to the table of humanity. That's what makes the world go round, you know. So, you know, yo siempre termino el programa con el siguiente refrán que dice, yo soy George Nenadich y esta es mi aportación a la música latina. Porque es mi aportación, ¿tú me entiendes? Y eso se lo robé a Roberto Rovera. Porque Roberto tiene un tema en la producción número 6. Porque he used to number all his albums. He would never give them titles. It would be Apollo Song 1, 2, 3. And then at the end of the last song on the B-side, at the very end, termina la canción y el cantante dice, esta es la aportación del Apollo Song a la música latina. And I said to myself, that is the baddest I've ever heard. And I say it to this day. I still say it. Es mi aportación. So, como ser humano, tenemos una responsabilidad social de aportar algo a la mesa de la humanidad para que el mundo siga dando vuelta. Whether it's working in a marketing agency, whether it's working on Sirius XM, or whether it's driving a car service, or whether it's cleaning the street, whether it's working in a bodega, making sandwiches, es tu aportación. ¿Tú me entiendes? Es la única forma. So, my mom used to say, I forgot she used to say it in Spanish, but she used to say, Waking up in the morning cannot be the greatest thing you did today. O sea, me levanté por la mañana. ¿Qué tú hiciste hoy? Me levanté. Eso es lo único que...
Eso no es suficiente.
Tú te tienes que despertar y aportar algo a la humanidad. Algo para que el mundo siga dando, para que el mundo siga dando vuelta. El taxista, el chofer de guagua, it keeps the world moving. So everybody has to do something to make the world move. You know?
I love it.
Yeah. Y eventualmente, pues, el turno tuyo termina. Y mi despedida sería cremated and a memorial with open bar.
I'm there.
Yeah, open bar. Open bar. Muchas fotos, muchos videos.
And open bar.
And open bar. Pero tú no entiendes que en cualquier velorio siempre se convierte en un sub party. Y lo único que hace falta es un trago para complementar el party. Porque eso, el velorio empieza con el inicio. El inicio es la triste. Ay, bendito. Y los joys salen las lágrimas.
Toma un traguito, mijo. Sí.
Después, a la larga es... Adiós, ¿cómo estás, mijo? Ay, Dios mío, tanto tiempo yo no te he visto. Why not have a fucking drink? Why not have a drink? Might as well.
You need one.
You need one. Everybody's gonna... So, have a bartender there mixing drinks. You have my ashes in an urn. You have a bunch of pictures, videos de mí, cositas, recuerdos. Y los tragos. Y pues, se terminó, ya se acabó. Y pues, carajo, yeah, spread the ashes, you know. I asked my daughter to carry my ashes around, a little tiny vial like that. Maybe in a necklace or something. I don't know. It's kind of weird. She's with a dude and fucking necklace of her father's ashes.
She can have them in her little altar.
Yeah, she can have a little altar. And, you know, and it's, you know, the what awaits you is what awaits you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea what to think. Sometimes I close my eyes and I say, I'm going to practice death. And I close my eyes. And I just close my eyes.
But you're still breathing.
I know. But my daughter goes, What is that? I was like, I'm practicing death. She goes, how? I was like, darkness overcomes you. Is the initial darkness overcomes. She's like, how do you know? I was like, I don't. It's all I have. It's all I have to imagine, because we don't know. We don't know what are the last thoughts that run through a person's mind when they're about to die. Nobody's lived to tell it. You know? Oh, this came to my mind. Oh, I saw this. I saw that. La gente que ve la luz. ¿Tú me entiendes? So, you know, eso fue lo que trajo el barco.
I love it. You're amazing. Thank you so much.